across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlow.
From the Lake Wissota studio, where we actually have a couple of topics out of Chippewa County to tell you about this hour. We'll talk about county political party shell games in a moment with Civic Media reporter James Kelly, who will tell us how some county Republican parties and the Trump campaign allegedly conspired to move money around to avoid reporting requirements. Also, there is a case of the county board telling the county sheriff in so many words, we're just going to pretend you don't exist anymore. We're not listening to you because of all the things you have done. We'll have some details on a new statement put out by the Chippewa County Board. Later in the hour, the League of Women Voters of Wisconsin Executive Director Deborah Kronmiller tells us about how the group is celebrating its 104th anniversary this month and working to expand voting rights. And we'll talk to Chad Holmes from Bull Falls Radio as well. And all of this is done with a brand spanking new phone number that we'd love to have you write down. Use it, call it, text it. 855-75-CIVIC. Again, 855-75-CIVIC. That's 855-752-4842. And if you don't care to remember numbers, use the Civic Media app. Get it downloaded and reach out. We would love to hear from you. Let's see. Kind of like the way that we hear from Rob in Tigerton, who wants to let Brittany know. Good morning from Tigerton. It's clear and 27. We got light fog, but it's a beautiful day. Looks like tonight will be a February version of March Madness, the wild weather version. Can't disagree with that in any way, shape, or form, Brittany. This is quite the weather roller coaster we're about to go on for the next, 36 hours or so?
Yeah, we sure are. You know, I looked at a video of the temperatures over the next 24 to 48 hours, and I took a little recording of it. It looks like a wave just pushing through the state of Wisconsin, and we are riding that. So I was making some jokes of being a Wisconsin surfer here this morning because we are going to see temperatures in the southern part of the state hit highs into the low to mid 70s potentially, wow, which is absolutely too hot for February. Record breaking. I expect high temperatures for today to be broken all the way from Madison to Milwaukee, even up north to Green Bay, and even into Wausau. I mean, yesterday, Eau Claire broke high temperature records and a bunch of different places as well. So here we go again. But like I mentioned, there's a wave right behind it. We will get hit with the storm and we will see temperatures drop extremely for tomorrow. So when you wake up tomorrow morning, there's going to be some bitter cold, blustery wind chills out there, and it's going to be feeling and looking a lot more like winter. So we don't have a big system of snow headed our way, but we will see rain mainly pushing into a good southern half of the state by tonight. And that overnight will flip to a little bit of ice potentially, where a little trace could be underneath, a light accumulation of snowfall by early tomorrow morning. You'll be waking up to about a trace out there. Now, a lot of places throughout the state expect a trace to an inch of snowfall through tonight and overnight. But if you live up north in the Northwoods, even potentially Green Bay, but especially Hurley, Ashland, Bayfield, Superior, that lake effect snow machine is going to be turned on, and you have the potential for anywhere from about 2 to 5 inches of snowfall. So a lot more up into the Northwoods, kind of like winter should be. You know, it's been opposite this season so far.
Oh my goodness, and that'd be downright cruel if they got 2 to 5 inches around Hayward after everything they worked, you know, to truck in snow for the Birkebeiner, which God bless them, they did it, made the most of it, and then we get snow like this. I mean, those numbers alone, maybe 70 for some today, maybe 10 for some people, you know, this time tomorrow, yeah. And then what? We'll be in the 50s and 60s again before you know it again, right?
Yes, we will. Actually, we have golf courses that just opened here in Wausau yesterday, and they're going to close Wednesday, Thursday, and they're going to reopen for the weekend because we'll hit 70s again.
it's quite a ride. And yes, you can see it in the 7 a.m. temperatures where they range from 27 in Hayward, 23 in Park Falls, to 49 in Madison right now, 47 in Oshkosh. It was in the mid-50s in Kenosha, you know, when Greg left for work today. So we'll keep watching it, and again, use all caution along the way, and Brittany will have details again this time tomorrow. Thanks, Brittany. Appreciate it very much.
Thank you.
All right. Yep. We'll talk to you later on. Quick note, you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Head over to upnorthnewswi.com. Sign up for it there. Christina Lori puts that together for us. Among the stories there today, what to know about Wisconsin's youth mental health crisis. And then my story on how the governor of Texas is defying the U.S. Supreme Court when it comes to responsibility for the border, and why that's not, shall we say, legal, nor is it helpful for addressing a very real crisis at the border that Republicans, on orders from President Trump, have decided to keep talking about but not do anything about it. Again, sign up for our newsletter over at upnorthnewswi.com. All right, I am pleased to be joined by James Kelly, civic media reporter from right here in Chippewa Falls as well. He's actually at the headquarters for WCFW and for 93.5 The Tap, you know, down there in downtown where someday I'm going to be more often as we continue building out that studio. But right now, James is there holding down the fort, covering the news all across western Wisconsin for us. James, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Pat. And I got to say, after Brittany's weather report, very glad to be in Chippewa Falls. It's nice and warm this year. This is my first Midwest winter, you know that. So it's I know it doesn't say a whole lot of positive things about the climate, but I'm quite happy with how warm it's been this winter.
You can be happy with this one. I would just say don't get used to it.
Yeah, I promise I won't.
It's not typical. It's not typical at all. We initially were planning to talk about one story, but then a second one came up dealing with the county sheriff, and we'll get to that a little bit later on. But we wanted to start first with what's been in the news for the Trump campaign, and this is a story that came out late last week while I was still on vacation there, with the Wisconsin Ethics Commission recommending that state prosecutors file felony charges against a fundraising committee for former President Donald Trump and Republican State Representative Janelle Branchen in an effort to unseat fellow Republican Assembly Speaker Robin Voss. And this really deals with the way that the Trump campaign wanted to be involved, but then there's financial reporting requirements. There's ways to move, you know, money around, and somebody got the idea of using county parties, and including the Chippewa County Party, to do that. James, this is something you've been following since pretty much your arrival in town, about, you know, this very unusual way, shall we say, of Republicans engaged in electoral infighting.
Yeah, and I think something that's important to mention is that it really kind of almost worked. I mean, this money was earmarked for Adam Steen in 2022, who is the challenger to Robin Voss in his district. He only lost that primary by 260 votes. It really wasn't that big of a loss for him. And the allegations by the Ethics Commission say that the party steered close to $40,000, maybe even more than $40,000 into this race using different counties. This is also Langlade and Florence County, in addition to Chippewa County. Now, here in Chippewa County, there were a couple of specific investigations that were mentioned by the Ethics Commission. One instance was a $5,000 donation from the National Committee Save America. That's a Trump political action committee. And in that donation, members of the Chippewa County Republican Party actually did raise concerns about campaign finance violations, and that donation was returned in full. The second instance in Chippewa County that was mentioned was a memo line that involved the number 63. And over the course of the investigation, the Ethics Commission discovered or believe that the number 63 marked on these donations was kind of an under-the-table way of saying, hey, send this to Steen's committee. Send this to Steen's political action committee. I believe it's Friends of Adam Steen, his candidacy committee. And that's how they were kind of earmarking that money, because under Wisconsin law, you can only donate $1,000 directly to a client as an individual, candidate. But as a county party, you can donate as much money as you want to the county party. There's just the loophole that's fixed in the law that says, if you donate money to the county party, you don't get to tell them where to send it next.
You don't. You're supposed to say, okay, you can give county parties, you know, so much more than you can give a single candidate. But if you write a 63 in the memo line, and that happens to be the 63rd Assembly District, where Robin Voss is and where Adam Steen was running against him, you can see where investigators might think there's a little bit of collaboration going on that's not supposed to happen. But to me, I just find it interesting that it sometimes feels like there aren't rules anymore, especially since Citizens United. So many things have been lifted in restrictions, but there are still some rules out there. And in this case, it is, you know, the way that you can give a lot of money to a county party, but you can't direct how they spend it. And if you do, well, now it looks like you may see felony charges filed.
Yeah, and that's the big thing, right? This was a clear attempt, if the allegations are substantiated, it's a clear attempt to circumvent campaign finance laws. And I don't think there's another spin to put on it. I don't think there's another way to say, okay, maybe this was an accident. It's not exactly, let's say, espionage, putting the assembly district that the money should be going to on the memo line for the donation.
No, it's not that secret. Now, Terry Brand, the chair of the Langlade County Republican Party, said the money was went to defeat Voss, but said he doesn't think it was illegal. He said to the Associated Press, "I don't believe we did anything illegal or wrong other than challenge Robin Voss. Robin Voss wants to send a message that whoever thinks about running against him should stay out of the business." No, it doesn't sound like that. I don't think it's Robin Voss sending the message. I think it's people who actually stand for law and order, who say the rules should still mean something. So, James, where does this kind of go from here? I mean, is it each DA in these three counties has to make a decision whether to file charges against the county parties, or is that still something that's in process?
Yeah, so here in Chippewa Falls, it was referred to Chippewa County DA Wade Newell, who actually says he can't take action on it, is kind of recusing himself from the matter because he is a registered member of the Chippewa County Republican Party. Mm-hmm. So that means that the Ethics Commission will either refer it to a neighboring county's DA or all the way to the state attorney general, Josh Call.
Right. And in each case, again, the district attorneys or the Department of Justice will then look into those laws about, you know, how those donations were used, how they were steered, you know, whether it's illegal for them to steer it. And, you know, this is something that may not necessarily reflect very well on the Trump campaign, which is already enmeshed in about a half a dozen other legal situations right now. And being caught up in one in Wisconsin may not necessarily be the best way to appeal to independent voters in Wisconsin. James Kelly, civic media reporter, is our guest this half hour. We're going to pause for a moment because then we want to talk about what's happening with the county sheriff here and a vote of no confidence by the county board. What does that mean? Live from Lake Wissota, you're up north on the Civic Media Radio Network. We're talking to James Kelly, civic media reporter in Chippewa Falls for us. We've been talking about the way that money was being funneled around, allegedly like some kind of a shell game here between the Trump campaign and county Republican parties in an effort to unseat Robin Voss, the Chippewa County Republican Party being one of those. But then there's another story coming out of Chippewa County that I noticed late yesterday. A statement was put out on behalf of the Chippewa County Board. We knew that there was a meeting last week. There had been several meetings, actually, about the behavior of the sheriff, Travis Hakes. He's fairly new in office. He won election. There was an open seat with the retirement of longtime sheriff Jim Kowalczyk. And Travis Hakes won that post. He's been there a couple of years, has been embroiled in controversy almost from the beginning. And James, it's come to this point now where this statement comes out from the Chippewa County Board saying, "We not only do we have no confidence in him, my words, not the resolutions, we're basically going to pretend he doesn't exist anymore because he would have an impact on credibility of investigations moving forward." Can you give us a little background on what all this is that the sheriff has been investigated for?
Yeah, so these allegations started over the summer. There was an investigation that was happening behind closed doors at the time that I moved here. Eventually, it came out into the light when the county board started to have meetings about this in public. Now, the investigation started due to Sheriff Hakes allegedly targeting a female job applicant and subordinate with inappropriate communications. And those texts were released. I've read them. You know, there's a lot of inviting this person to maybe things that they shouldn't have been invited to, things along that nature. It then proceeded to say that maybe Sheriff Travis Hakes was conducting some outside business on county police time. Those allegations were involved as well. And then we got to December, and District Attorney Wade Newell noted that, well, maybe Sheriff Hakes shouldn't be involved in investigations going forward because there's a Brady issue from his time with the Chautauqua Police Department. In that issue, the implication was that he told the victim that he could maybe alter body cam footage or turn the body camera off. That was the implication. He is adamant that that's not what he meant when he said what he said to that particular victim. But at this point, things are starting to stack up, and the Chippewa County Board no longer has any confidence in him. So they'll be going through the deputy chief or a designee of the deputy chief going forward, unless they specifically request information from Sheriff Hakes himself.
Yeah, the Brady disclosure that we're talking about is something, it's information, according to the statement, that is compiled by the district attorney's office, containing the names and details of law enforcement officers who have had incidents of untruthfulness, criminal convictions, candor issues, or some other type of issue placing their credibility into question. And so if that's the case, if the sheriff is now subject to these Brady disclosures, it could certainly have an impact negatively on how the district attorney is prosecuting cases that are brought by the sheriff. And so they're saying their recommendation is for the sheriff to no longer be actively involved in any investigation, don't handle physical evidence. And as you started to say, that there have already been some examples put out in this statement of his history of, shall we say, not being credible. You mentioned the way he may have implied that he could alter body cam recordings, even though Hake said that when this happened as a patrol officer in the city of Chautauqua, he had said he resigned in good standing, but then these details came to light. When he was a part-time police chief in Elk Mound, he had to be placed on a performance plan due to his failure to be present and to follow directions, and that Hakes has since made public statements about discrimination in the Chippewa County Sheriff's Department that don't appear to have merit, and yet he won't retract them.
That was a particularly interesting one, because a couple days after he had made those allegations, and it's worth mentioning that those allegations came after he attended a training for discrimination. So he attended this training and came out and said, yeah, I actually found out during the process that there were three officers who were passed over for jobs that they were qualified for, to which the HR director for the county investigated and found that that didn't happen. And in fact, one of the people he had mentioned had never been turned down for a job before. They had gotten every job that they had applied for within the department. So the reason for him saying those people had been discriminated against, I could not say for sure. But clearly the county says that's not true. That's not the case.
Right. And so that, along with the earlier incidents, have led the county board. And by the way, this was not a close vote. It was 19-1 on this motion, right?
Yep.
And this is, the Chippewa County Board, while this is predominantly, one would say, a conservative county, not overwhelmingly so, especially in the city of Chippewa Falls and other communities. So to get a 19-1 vote out of the county board is no small deal after, again, months and months of looking at the evidence. And so there is that declaration of no confidence, and they have directed the concerns to be of the Board of Supervisors to be forwarded, and again, they want to, I want to get the wording right on here, that the Board of Supervisors and committees going forward will receive information and reports regarding the Sheriff's Department from the chief deputy or the chief deputy's designee and not the sheriff, unless specifically requested. Because essentially, again, he's an elected official. But the county board is saying, in so many words, you basically don't exist to us anymore. You may be elected, but we're not dealing with you anymore. And I'm certainly not aware of, and I've been covering county boards and local and state government for decades. I'm not familiar with anything close to this in the area.
Yeah, and going off that, the county board did early on in the process explore the possibility of having him removed as sheriff. I'm not sure what the status of that plan is at this point. At the county board meeting about 2 months ago, they had decided to kind of put a pin in it as the investigation continued to unfold. Now, that would involve going all the way up to Governor Tony Evers if they were going to try to remove him, because he is an elected official. So you can't just say as the county board, there's a few too many problems here. So we're going to say maybe not anymore. Maybe you take a hike. He's elected. They can't do that.
And in this era where impeachment has been increasingly politicized, you don't have the same checks and balances. In a past life, unfortunately, in a perfect world, a governor, it wouldn't matter if they were Democratic or Republican, would, look at this and make a determination. And I'm quite certain the governor's office, well, frankly, any governor's office in this day and age would say, we don't really want to look like we're trying to undo the election of somebody. So the county board is doing what you could either say is the next best thing or the best thing in this day and age, and saying, we're just not dealing with you anymore. We're not going to look to have you unseated necessarily, but we're done. You're invisible to us. And James Kelly continues to follow all that out of Chippewa Falls for us, along with other news in the Chippewa Valley for Civic Media. James, it was great to get these updates on these two big stories. We'll have to do this in a bit lighter setting and find out more about what else you're covering and what you're doing. But thanks for filling us in on these two big stories out of Chippewa County today.
Absolutely, Pat. Thanks for having me.
All right, you bet. Have a great day. And when we come back, Deborah Cronmiller is going to join us from the League of Women Voters, noting its 104th anniversary this month and the work that still goes on to expand the right to vote to every rightful voter in the state of Wisconsin. Live from Chippewa Falls on the Civic Media Radio Network, you're up north. You never go wrong starting with Schoolhouse Rock to bring in a segment, and we will be talking about suffrage in just a moment here with Deborah Cronmiller from the League of Women Voters. First, a reminder that there's a new evening lineup weeknights on the Civic Media Radio Network. Busted Pencils is now on 5 nights a week at 6 p.m. talking about education issues. Nightlight with Pete Schwaba is now on from 7 to 9 with great entertainment news. Native Roots Radio comes on at 9 o'clock. That's the new lineup for weeknights on Civic Media. And then coming up in just a bit, Chad Holmes will join me, and we will talk about Kenneth Chesbro and the latest things that we have learned about the Wisconsin attorney's connection to 2020 efforts to overturn the rightful results of an American presidential election. But let's talk about the League of Women Voters for a bit, marking its 104th anniversary here in February. And that included, if you looked at upnorthnewswi.com on our website, there was an opinion piece that Deborah had put up earlier in the month talking about the need to continue the work to expand voting rights, because even when it was going on low those many years ago, it wasn't being done perfectly. We're always seeking that more perfect union. And so Deborah's going to join us and talk about what the league is doing in those directions these days. Deborah, good morning. Nice to have you here.
Good morning, Pat. Thank you so much.
It's nice to learn more. We visited with you right at the start of the year to talk a bit about election and voting issues. And now we're noting that it was on February 14th, 1920, that the organization was started by Ripon-born Carrie Chapman Catt, who said the group's job was to finish the fight to win suffrage for women. So people would look at that and go, okay, mission accomplished, right? And you and I both know it's far from that.
That's true. It was not true completely then, and it's not true completely now, even, you know, in 1920, a compromise was made, actually, and at the formation of the League of Women Voters to educate voters and to help women do something they had never done before. Not all women at that time were granted the vote. Particularly Black women were not allowed to vote until 1965. And that was a big miss. We had an opportunity. We didn't take that opportunity in order to get the women's rights for white women. If we could go back 104 years, would we do it differently? I think yes, but we can't do that. And we just have to push forward and ensure that everyone who has the right to vote actually has access to the ballot, which is an ongoing fight for us.
That's right. And you note, let me read this little excerpt to the listeners here in Wisconsin, as well as across the country, barriers to access the ballot box can be especially towering for youth, people of color, folks with disabilities, and other marginalized groups. While the league's work is rooted in history, we also know the suffragist movement was hypocritical in its fight, often excluding women of color. Unfortunately, Wisconsinites are still facing new efforts to stifle our rights. This November, Wisconsin will vote on an amendment in the state constitution, again, about who can vote. And frankly, Deborah, we're seeing this more than any other point in most of our lifetimes, those of us born after the Voting Rights Act had passed, this continuing effort by an entire political class to make it more difficult to vote. And I don't feel like I can say this enough, Deborah. There is no other advanced democracy in the world where you have an entire political faction dedicated to making it harder to vote. It is amazingly unique in the world right now in our lifetimes, is my point of view.
Yes, I think you're accurate. We are working hard to ensure that people who have the right to vote can vote. We do that in niche areas like within the jails to make sure that people who have not been convicted of a felony can access the ballot, which is difficult here in Wisconsin. We also work in communities across the state to ensure that young people and elders and people with disabilities will be able to get to the ballot. And it is unfortunate that you are in some ways, it's fortunate we have this decentralized voting system in Wisconsin with 1,852 clerks administering our elections. But that means there are 1,852 decision makers who may make curbside voting more or less accessible to all voters in their area, who may make a choice of a polling place that may be in a building that is not completely ADA compliant. They may or may not train their poll workers to use the accessible voting equipment that by law they're mandated to do, but we know through our observation program, not all poll workers are trained to help voters use that equipment.
And it also can't be said enough that for groups, the League of Women Voters included, that advocacy for voting rights, advocacy for, you know, access to the ballot box, not just legal, but physical, there's nothing partisan about that. That should never, ever be a partisan issue, even though the league does get accused sometimes of having a partisan bias simply for, again, being pro-voting.
Yes, and we are pro-voting, and we do not believe it's a partisan issue. And it really historically has not been a partisan issue, which is good and accurate. But right now, we're in a very polarized world here in the United States. And we believe that with the newly enacted maps, that some of that polarization may go away, which we're very thankful for. We've been fighting for fair maps for so many, over a decade. And we really believe that it was the gerrymandered maps that caused our politicians to kind of retreat to the very most extreme corners of their political predispositions. And that left very little space in the middle for compromise. With these newly enacted maps, where we will reinstate competitive districts across Wisconsin, I think we'll see a resumption of what is a truthful and honest ability to govern and compromise across the aisle for the good of the people. I think under these extremely gerrymandered maps, what we saw was an elected, set of officials who really didn't believe they were beholden to their constituents, but rather to their parties and to their donors. And I'm just so delighted that we're looking forward to a return in Wisconsin to what is our progressive route and that ability to compromise.
You know, we started with the Schoolhouse Rock segment on suffrage and women getting the right to vote. Wisconsin was the first state to ratify the 19th Amendment, but from an early time, the League and its allies have been not just about voting, but about running, especially in that place where hopefully you see some of the most agreement, and that's at the local level, not the big money politics of the national level, but encouraging people to run for local office is, again, that's as basic as hometown democracy gets.
Right. And in this April, we're going to see elections across the state where very important people will be elected, our school board officials, our county board officials, our municipal officials. And as you indicate, these are the folks who really have the most influence on our daily lives as Wisconsin citizens. And as important as our fights have been for the state and the federal races, we know that most all decisions that affect our daily lives are made at the local level.
At the national level, we're going to be talking about National Women's History Month coming up in March, which is just coming up at the end of this week. And was looking into how Senator Tammy Baldwin and others have led a bipartisan effort to put up a monument toward the suffragist movement to get women the right to vote. Now, that's not a done deal yet. There's still some debate being held in Washington, D.C. as to the location of such a memorial. But it was really surprising to me, Deborah, that it feels extremely overdue for something to commemorate women who spent lifetimes, generations, fighting for something as basic as the right to vote. And I'm sure the League would like to see some kind of a monument somewhere someday as well.
We certainly would. This has been a long fight. And, though we got suffrage in 1920, for 72 years before 1920, women, generations of women, had been advocating for this right to vote. And we've seen, how voting has progressed. Women before 1920 had some opportunity to vote in local elections for school boards, for municipal officials, because I guess the prevailing thought was they were in the hunt of those kind of decisions for their own family. They should be able to exercise that vote at the polling places. They were just denied the vote at the state and federal election level. We're seeing that same question coming up again here in Wisconsin in November as to whether or not non-citizens can be granted the right to vote in municipal elections because they live there. Their kids go to school there. They work in those communities. They pay taxes in those communities. And it's it's a sadness for me that the circle has come full cycle since, before we had suffrage in 1920, that we're still debating this very important question.
And it will be, like you said, a constitutional amendment that's up, one that says only citizens can vote. Language to that effect is already, a part of the U.S. Constitution, but it really appears to be about, as you note in the op-ed, creating new obstacles for people of color and non-English speakers at the polls when, the history of our country has always been about helping, new arrivals, helping marginalized citizens to, earn and then exercise that right to vote. So going forward in what's going to be, of course, a very busy year, would be anyway, what with the presidential election, never mind the conditions of the environment that are out there. But what kinds of things will the League be doing throughout its, now 105th year to educate voters?
I think we'll continue with some of the strategies that we've employed in the past. We have more capacity now as a state organization to really get out the vote. We are in touch with more voters via text and phone banking. We put out more media, more social media. We have the opportunity in these last couple of years with our expanded budget to actually engage in paid advertising to get to areas that we know people are not voting at the same levels as in other areas of the state, around campuses, in some of our metropolitan areas, in our lowest income sectors of communities. And there are a lot of barriers for individuals still in those areas. And, you know, that's where we have to double down and really make sure that every student knows they need an ID, they need proof of residency, that every person of color in this state will know their vote will be counted. The only reason it wouldn't be counted is if they don't cast it.
And you note as well, again, in the editorial about the various things that the 2000 League members in Wisconsin do about holding candidate forums, staffing those tables. It also says running for vote411.org. Again, vote411.org. What would people learn at that site?
Vote 411 is a league-sponsored voter guide, essentially. We reach out to all the candidates and ask them a number of, you know, questions, basic questions. Why do they think they're the right person for the job? What qualifies them for the job? What will they bring to the job? What ideas, what innovations are they thinking about that their community or district would need? And in their own words, we print their responses. And so voters can actually see, not through the lens of the media or not through the lens of somebody else's opinion about that person, but from that person themselves, what they hope to bring to the job. And we think it's really valuable. We also link in Vote 411 to all the polling place information, to, you know, your clerk's information. So it's really a one-stop shop for getting the important information a voter needs to be able to cast their ballot.
And I also noticed on the homepage as well, the phone numbers to call if you want to report an election day issue, both in English and Spanish, Asian, Arabic, all to ensure that people can have that free and unfettered access to the ballot box for every qualified voter. Deborah Cronmiller from the Executive Director of the League of Women Voters of Wisconsin, thank you very much. It was good to talk to you again.
Thank you, Pat.
All right. When we come back, Chad Holmes from Bull Falls Radio will tell us what comes up next on his show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Chad Holmes is coming up next on Bull Falls Radio in Wausau, and you can listen to it on the Civic Media app as well. And Chad, again, thank you for filling in last week, Monday, Tuesday. Appreciate it. I hope Greg and everybody, hope they were really nice to you.
Oh, it was great. I felt guilty the rest of the week, though.
Because, guilty?
Yeah, because I would be, you know, here getting ready to go on the air, and I would hear Todd Alba on the air. And then I would hear him later in the day with an extra hour. And I'm starting to think, man, maybe I should have been a little more giving.
Oh, yeah. You're such a slacker. Yeah. Said the guy who then, I got to get on this bus and go 500 miles to cover a horseshoe tournament. And then I got to be back on time for my radio show.
I felt guilty. I tell you that. He was like, I mean, the last number of weeks, Alba is like.
Alba has nothing else to do. Alba will be the first to tell you he has no life. That the reason he goes from Shawnee to Chippewa Falls to Hayward to whatever is he's just one step ahead of the law at most of this time. Or the bill collector or whatever. He loves this life. He would be Jim Rockford on the Rockford Files. He'd be living, you know, in a houseboat, solving mysteries if he could. So
I was thinking if it was a normal winter, he would have taken a dog sled all around the state last week.
He would.
And then put his logo on the back of it and really make a production out of it.
Oh, my goodness. What was that Murphy Brown where they had a, let so-and-so do it? If we had a thing, it's just a segment, let Todd do it. And we just threw outlandish stuff out there. He'd be game.
Did you see what he did with the Hayward studio?
No.
He decorated it.
He decorated the Hayward studio.
It looked like a morning talk show.
Aw. That's so nice.
Yeah.
All right. We're enough of the time, all the appreciation segment here. Yeah. I want to talk to you a bit about the cheese bro. That of course would be Kenneth Chesbro.
You read my mind. I tell you, because we did not talk about
this. We did not talk about this.
That is exactly what I wanted to talk about today.
Well, I was actually going to lead into it this way, that when you're on my show and I'm on yours, and the same with Todd Alba and with Maggie Dawn and all that, it's not that when I say we don't pre-script these things, it's not that we're bragging. It's that A, we're busy. We're trying to script out so many other things. And there's B, there's this degree of trust. Like I can throw anything at you. You can throw anything at me. And so I did not tell you ahead of time that, yeah, I want to talk about this because it's always interesting to see what we come up with. Sometimes it's a news topic. Sometimes it's something, you know, more featurey. So yes, I was going to bring up Kenneth Chesbro, a Wisconsin native, and I'm going to read from,
he had to be right, though, with that name.
Of course. From Molly Beck's story in the journal Sentinel, a Wisconsin native at the center of Trump's 2020 scheme to stay in power, tweeted anonymously under the name Badger Pundit in the days following Trump's loss, promoting theories on how the president could avoid leaving office. And look, there's nothing wrong with having an anonymous Twitter account and, you know, putting things out there. But when you then talk to investigators in Michigan and I think Georgia as well, and you deny certain aspects, and then it's found out later you actually were tweeting anonymously as Badger Pundit, I think this is not going to go well for Mr. Chesbro's efforts to avoid legal culpability for helping Trump in 2020. What do you think?
I think exactly. But also even beyond the specifics of, you know, just how wrong it is where you're working with the prosecutors and they're giving you a deal in order to avoid going to jail. And the only thing they're asking for is for you to be upfront and honest about the information you're giving. But also it is part of a pattern that we saw going back to, you know, the first Trump campaign, but you go back to Inauguration Day 2017, where all of a sudden lying has become so easy for a lot of people. And I don't know about you, but even up to this point of my life, and I think for most people still, you lie, you at least feel bad about it. I don't get the sense that any of these folks have any moral problem with lying constantly. And that is a big problem for our system, for our government, for democracy as a whole, in my opinion. So even beyond the idea that he, you know, get in trouble, but obviously he went in there, took this deal from prosecutors, and then decided, well, I'm gonna lie, and I'm gonna lie at a very high rate. And I just find that to be exceptionally disturbing as well.
Right. Again, it's essentially the lie of omission in that he denied using Twitter or having, quote, alternate IDs when he was asked by Michigan investigators, but has since confirmed to CNN that he was using the Badger Pundit account. And this isn't just, you know, Michigan and Georgia. He was in the Wisconsin state capitol on that December day in 2020 when the fake electors were there signing paperwork falsely claiming that Trump had won. And so
real quickly, Pat, it's more than just of omission. He did actively lie. He was asked about an Atlantic magazine article that came out well before, you know, some of these ideas came out. And he said, no, I never saw it. And as part of that Badger Pundit Twitter account, he had posted about that very article the day it came out. So I just want to make sure that this is not about, you know, just trying to shade it. Very much a liar when it came to talking to the prosecutors.
And I recall that article being an Atlantic subscriber and seeing that article and going, oh my gosh, this is exactly the roadmap to what Trump is likely to do. And then he did. And yeah, Kenneth Chesbro was somewhere in the midst of all of that.
And also real fast, I'm sorry to interrupt you because but I hope again that they do not slap this guy in the wrist, because you know that if this was a person of color, a minority, a poor person going through a similar issue, they always get slammed down as hard as possible. But if you are a person of means, a person that has some sort of social standing, you get the benefit of the doubt. It's time, again, to truly make our justice system as equal as possible. And I just have this fear that, oh, yeah, he lied here, and he's still going to get a slap on the wrist.
Oh, that's all we hear from Trump is that, oh, there's two tiers of justice, two tiers. Yeah, there is, as a matter of fact, and it's getting rather old that he and his cronies are getting away with as much, you know, that you and I would never get away with in terms of contempt of court and the penalties that you'd pay and everything like that. So, yep, I understand that entirely. Chad Holmes has all this and much more conversation weekdays from 8 to 10 on Bull Falls Radio out of Wausau. And again, if you're not in the Wausau area, you get that on the app, the Civic Media app. Thank you, sir. Have a wonderful day.
Hey, thank you too, Pat.
And thanks again for filling in last week. I appreciate that very much, Mr. Bach. Thank you too as well. And thanks for all of you for being a part of the program today. Just a reminder that Up North News is the Wisconsin outlet for Courier Newsroom, which has outlets in several states. You can learn more over at couriernewsroom.com. Find us at upnorthnewswi.com or look for us on Facebook or Instagram or Twitter. Just search for Up North News WI. We're on the TikTok as well. And, of course, you can follow me on social media. Tomorrow, Climate Check. We'll talk to Melissa Baldoff, and then Homeroom is all about Public Schools Week. Thanks for joining us. Have a wonderful day. We'll